to, so you want to be a comic book retailer. My name is Joe Field. I am the owner of Flying Colors Comics and other cool stuff in Concord, California, about 20 miles east of San Francisco. In addition to that, I am the founder of Free Comic Book Day and the president of Comics Pro, which is the Comics Professional Retailer Organization, a network of about 150-plus retailers in North America, comprising 180-plus storefronts. We also have a mentoring program for those who are interested in becoming comic book retailers. It's a great extension of what you're going to see here today. This is a pretty open kind of forum here today. What we're going to do is introduce you to our panel members and get a little bit of their background. And then we are going to pretty much open it up for questions. If things run the way they have in the last several years, there will probably still be questions after our time is up. So please feel free to approach any one of us and get the answers to those questions. Another one of our panel members has just shown up. And so a couple of housekeeping announcements past what's already been said. Comics Pro is a nonprofit organization that is for the advancement of the professionalism of comic book retailers, of storefront comic book retailers. And as such, we our members are all comic book retailers, existing comic book retailers. We do have that mentoring program, and you will find in a couple of different places this pamphlet, which talks about our mentoring program and how to get into it, how to sign up, what it costs. It's not very expensive. It's under $100. And for getting into it, you get the advice of many experienced retailers. Very well worthwhile if you're looking at opening a store. In addition to being a retailer member of Comics Pro, however, we have just created a new level of participation for those who are not comic book retailers, and that is what we call the Comics Pro Backer. And a backer can be anyone who wants to support what we are trying to do, which is grow the direct market, grow the number of direct market comic book storefronts, and improve the general professionalism of comic book retailers. So these forms are also available if you would like to become a Comics Pro backer. At the end, after this session is over, there will be another session from 5:45 to 6:30 in room 12, room 13. Okay, in room 12, called Branching Out the National Comic Book Store Franchise. David Wheeler, who is on our panel here today, has started to franchise his operation with the opening recently of a store in Bellingham, Washington. The purpose of his panel after this one is to talk with David about his new franchise and to try to get as detailed information as possible about franchise agreements, how they work, how you might be able to set one up. And he will be talking with one of our Comics Pro board members, Carl D'Angelo, and that will be in room 12. And we'll be talking about opening a store, running a second store, franchising your operation, talking about David's new franchise. So from here, migrate over to room 12 for more discussion of comics retail. Now, I want to introduce who we have up here. We are still missing one of our panel members, but from the far end of the table, I will start. Put your hands together for Michael Ring, the owner of Bridge City Comics. And next to Michael is David Wheeler, Dragon Slayer. Awesome. And then we have Derek Taylor from Comic Oasis in Las Vegas. And we have also Thomas Gall from Corner Store Comics and Beach Ball Comics in Orange County, California. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. The first question I want to ask is to the audience, and then I will get to talking to you. How many people in here right now have a comic book store? Okay. Very good. How many people here would like to open a comic book store? You're beautiful people. Okay. And that's not because of Misery Loves Company, let me tell you, okay? Comic book retail is a great living to be a part of. So what I want to do, though, is I want to start with the panel here and sort of get your comic book retailing origin stories. Okay, so we're going to start with Thomas.
Oh, thank you.
And Thomas, tell us a little bit about how you got into retailing comics and, what's your origin story? What's your superpower?
It all started, actually, 9 years ago here at Comic-Con. I'd actually lived in California for almost 12 or 15 years and had never been down here. Came down here just to check it out, and by the time I got home, I was opening a Diamond account. I actually started online with comics and toys, and the toys took off really fast. So for the first couple of years, we were primarily an online toy store that actually sold comic books as well. I was working a full-time job at the time, then moved into a storefront for Corner Store. Corner Store turns 10 next year. Along the way, 2006, we purchased another online toy competitor called Amazing Toys, incorporated that into Corner Store, and then in December of 2008, we bought Beach Ball Comics, which was about 23 years old at the time, and then completely overhauled that. So now we've got the two stores plus the web store. So, and two anniversaries next year, 10 years and 25 years. Because Beach will be 25 and Corner Store will be 10 next year. So.
Well, then you've got lots of opportunity to promote.
I hope so.
So would you recommend that those considering opening a retail store start online? Or what's your experience with that?
Well, for me, I thought it was beneficial for me because it allowed me to actually kind of start the old-fashioned way, which was literally I had $233 and started small because I had a full-time job at the same time and then slowly built it up. Because one of the things that I tell people when they ask about opening a shop or buying a shop is, you know, don't go into a whole lot of debt to open a store. And so fortunately, I was in a position to slowly build it up so that I never had to start off in a huge hole, which can obviously be a strain on a new business. So, for me, the online thing, I came from an IT background, so the online thing for me was a natural, and then it just kind of grew out of there, and, you know, it didn't take but a couple years to move into the storefront, and now the two storefronts are as much a part of our business as the online business is. So, for me, I think it was a good start. So,
our final panelist has arrived, Dave Hawksworth from Diamond Comics. Everyone in this room, he has probably seen more comic book stores than all of us combined.
Definitely.
I'm just going to make that call right now because I know how many.
Thank you, Shannon.
Okay. So let's get on with the origin stories and move on to Derek Taylor at Comic Oasis in Las Vegas.
Hello, everybody. My name is Derek. I've actually bought my store. It was owned by someone else in Las Vegas, so I didn't build anything from the ground up. I was a fan of comics my entire life, probably since I was five. I wanted to do a comic book store. My mom thought it was ridiculous, but that's kind of, just something that I always wanted to do. I spent a lot of time in L.A., and I worked at Golden Apple for comic books for quite a few years, so I was kind of a Bill Leibowitz protege. I liked the way he did everything, so everything I do in my store is pretty close to the way he did it. I'm an electronics guy, similar to him. I was a home theater, so I had a whole theater business where I would do, the drop-down stereo stuff and speakers on the wall. And the guy's store that I went to, his name was Tim Bowl. he asked me one day, did you still want to buy my comic book store? I'm like, yeah. So I stopped doing my home theater stuff, took out an SBA loan because I wouldn't want to spend my own money, so keep that in mind also. And went full bore into it. My superpower is probably blind enthusiasm. I can just, I see an idea and I'm just going to run with it and make it happen no matter what it takes.
I can confirm that.
Give you an idea, I do a lot of work with it, promotional-wise. I'm a marketing guy. I like doing stuff like that. And I was working with some guys in the theater and they said, well, you know, what would we do to promote a movie? I'm like, well, let's get Stan Lee. And they like, well, okay, do that. No idea. But, 6 months later, we had Stan Lee coming out doing a signing in the store, something he hadn't done in 20 years. It's a lot of work. I mean, but it's fun. I enjoy it. I love comic book stores more than anything else. I mean, I like going to comic book stores. I like each person's store is like kind of their personality, and you can see it when you walk in there. You can tell a guy like me, people think I'm like a regimented German, everything's got its place. I can tell you where every single book is in the store right now, because that's where it's supposed to be, and if it's not that way, then there's a problem happening or whatever. So, I've taken what I've got and started making store fixtures for other stores because, comics don't really work on the material that they're designed for videotapes or whatever. Any little thing that I've done, this is probably the most enjoyable work that I've done. I've been in subs, I've worked on power plants, and this is probably the most fun I've ever had in my life. So, take that for what it's worth.
All right, thanks. David Wheeler from Dragon's Lair in Austin and the franchise.
But well, I got into comics about nine. Well, that's not true. I got into comics when I was growing up, and I got my Godzilla comics, and I collected the Invaders and that sort of thing. And I know this is going to cause you to cringe, but trying to preserve them, I stapled them carefully together along the spine to make sure they never separated, which is a no-no. And I sort of fell out of comics, but I got to the University of Texas back in 82 and met a very cute girl, and she was working in a comic shop, so I got a job in a comic shop, and unfortunately that comic shop closed. But the manager of that comic shop decided to open his own comic shop, and I went over there and I worked at that comic shop, and that comic shop closed. And in 86, I decided to open up my own comic book store. To some extent, I kind of felt like and I know this sounds terrible, but I kind of felt like I had an obligation to the customers that we had at the other stores to continue to provide a place for them to go and buy their comics, because, by golly, they were my friends, and I liked them, and they knew me. So I opened my own store in 86 while I was still attending the University of Texas, which is a bad idea, because, both my classes suffered, and it wasn't really the best way to open a comic store or any sort of business while my attentions were divided. I guess about in 2000, we went ahead and purchased a second store that was in San Antonio, and it was called Excalibur, and the owner was moving to Maryland. His wife was a doctor, and she was moving, and that was a pretty good idea for him to go with her. So I bought that store, and about the same time I opened a store in Round Rock, which is about 20 minutes away from my existing store in Austin. And I also opened a store in San Marcos, which truthfully didn't work. So I've got some experience in that too. Several years ago, my wife got allergies, bad allergies, and honestly, she was not doing too well in Austin. So I looked into what I could do because of my industry experience and decided that a franchise was something I could offer people who were interested in opening their own stores. So I pursued that, and I'm now living in New Mexico and helping people open stores. We just opened our first franchise store in mid-May in Bellevue, Washington. And by golly, I'm overjoyed with how it's going there, and I think the owner of that store is too. So I guess that sort of quickly brings me up to current.
Great. Thank you, David. And Michael from Portland, Oregon and Bridge City Comics. Let's have a rip at your origin story.
Well, I was a student in college, and we went on a field trip, and there was this irradiated spider. So, comics jokes. Comics humor. Much like everybody else up here, I love comics my entire life, and I went to college and discovered girls, and luckily they discovered me too. And so I moved to Portland. I'm originally from Michigan. I moved to Portland, got a job at a publisher, and a comics publisher. Worked there for 7 years, and about when I turned 30, I hope it wasn't a midlife crisis, because that means I'll only live until 60. But I decided that I really wanted to try my hand at comic shop, owning a comic shop. So I made the decision to quit my job and open up the shop. And 5 years later, I'm still doing it. And I'm a member of Comics Pro, and they really helped out. And I look to these guys for inspiration. And hopefully, they look to me for a little inspiration too, because it's kind of a family. It really is kind of a family. You get to know people all over the country and steal their ideas and stuff like that. So that's my origin.
So tell me that your store opened, what year?
2005.
2005. What do you think makes your store uniquely suited to the Portland market you're in?
Well, Portland has an embarrassment of riches for comic shops. There are at least 10 in a 10-mile radius. And it's a mid-sized city. It's not a big city. And we all kind of have different specialties. Mine, I figured I couldn't get any back issues that anybody else got, so I may as well not really do back issues and have long white boxes. And I don't really want to be a toy store, I'd rather be a comic book store, even though there's nothing wrong with... Sorry, Thomas. But, I really focused on graphic novels and new comics. And, we have thousands and thousands of graphic novels, and, we're just trying to promote the industry and get new people in that way. Because people are really trending towards, people who are new to comics tend to prefer to get a graphic novel, they get a bigger chunk of the story, and things like that. So that's kind of the focus of our store.
So, David, how would you answer that question? What makes your stores uniquely suited to the markets they're in?
Well, our stores are blended. We have about 50% comics and 50% games. I like having two legs to stand on, as it were. So we have two income streams from related clientele. What makes us unique to Austin? Austin is a very hip and tech-savvy place. We tend to appeal to those clientele. We set up our store so that it has events and that sort of thing that appeal to them.
Okay. Derek?
I was absorbing this information. Well, my store, basically, as far as store goes, it's going to be whatever your customers want it to be. I mean, if it was up to me, we'd be selling them with Vertigo and, dark, dreary books, but that's not what everybody wants. I'm carrying, Oni, of course, like everybody else is right now for Scott Pilgrim. But I think what makes us the best is, I got a great staff. I mean, the guys who work at my store are phenomenal. I mean, we started carrying board games because a guy named, one of my employees suggested that we should carry board games. I'm like, well, I don't know to the bottom. But he did, and he put some effort into it, and the board games work for us. Holly, one of my managers, she's into, the vinyl figures and stuff like that. So we did some research, start bringing in the vinyl toys. Now we have like four or five people who went up for the Money Month on Kid was a Kid Robot site that were pretty impressive. It's about we grow for what our customers need, and my staff kind of are the customers also. They can feel what people are interested in and what they're excited about. Of course, I still want to have Vertigo stuff. So we have every Sandman and all that stuff like that, but. All of the comic, the material is the same. It's what you bring to that material, what kind of energy you bring to it. There's another store in town named Jay. His name's Maxim Comics. He has a store, and he's really into the Luna Brothers, and his numbers he sells for Luna Brothers is insane. I mean, it's like twice as much as I sell for some X-Men books, and it's the energy you put into it that makes something work.
Thomas,
Well, having the two stores in the same, the two stores we have in Anaheim are only about 7 miles apart, so the benefit that we have is that we can actually let those two stores become completely separate things. And the one store, because that's where our warehouse is that we run our web business out of, carries a lot more toys, carries a lot more statues, and the way that we display them, we actually put them out so that people can, you know, see what this product actually looks like. It brings in new comic customers, and while Beach is more of a pure comic shop where we get to try and experiment with all different kinds of, you know, like Derek was saying, you know, vinyl toys and posters and t-shirts and that type of thing. So it's, I guess I would agree with Derek in saying that the customers kind of help the stores become what they need to become. And so, plus we're the only two stores in Anaheim, so I guess that makes me unique enough.
He's a comic book overlord.
Working on it.
And Joe, can I say something real quick?
Sure.
I think one of the common threads really to answer that question is we are what makes it unique, because these are extensions of us and what we love and what we like. And the same is true for everybody who raised their hand when Joe said that, you know, you want to be a retailer. You know, you put in so much blood, sweat, and tears on this thing that it is an absolute reflection of you. And we all have employees, and they all kind of put their separate stamps on the store as well. But ultimately, each store is as unique as a snowflake. But it's really true. And you really get a good feel for the personalities behind the store when you go into the store. You know that Derek's into, like, dark stuff, apparently.
Very, very, very angry. Brutal.
But,
yeah, that's a good point. Snowflakes, not flakes. Okay. Mr. Dave Hawksworth here. You've been an outside sales manager with Diamond for a number of years. You've seen more comic book stores than almost anybody on earth. Give us your little update as to how you see the state of the comic book retail world and what great stores you've seen in the recent past.
Well, in the recent past, and this is not just in the last year, but maybe over the last decade, I have seen a lot of stores improve themselves, make their businesses better, bring in better operating systems, bring in better ways of merchandising and marketing their products, better ways of advertising themselves. And in that sense, I see this industry as strong as I've ever seen it in the 25 years that I have been distributing comics in this business. I think this is a great time to open a comic book store, to be a small business owner, to provide something for your family and for yourselves. And like the gentleman from Portland said, this is an extension of yourself. This is an opportunity for you to have a business and something that you love to do and to make money in an area where you're passionate. And as far as the comic book business and the comic book stores go, it is something that continues to get better and better every day. And the stores that we see out there are someplace that families and children, adults, girls, guys, everyone wants to shop at and enjoy the products that we are able to sell to them.
Thanks, Dave. It is one of those things that when we talk about opening a new comic book store, I've been quoted a number of times in articles saying that I believe, and I still do right now, I believe there's room for at least 1,000 new comic book stores that are well-run in North America. There's a tremendous amount of uncovered, uncharted territory, unserviced areas for comics retail. And it's going to take the entrepreneurial effort and ingenuity of some of you and others to be able to look and see where there are opportunities to open stores.
I can expand on that. Diamond Comic Distribution offers some demographic opportunities that we can give you information that are areas that are underserved in comic book stores. If you contact 410-560-7100 and ask for new accounts, our new account representatives and coordinators can provide you information where there are areas that are underserved and give you some ideas of where to open a comic store that can be profitable for you. It is 410-560-7100.
Okay, we are going to shortly open this up for questions. What I would like you to do, if you would like to ask a question, is we have a microphone in the center right there. If you can line up behind that, and we will get to your questions in order. And so I would ask you to start to do that while I ask one more question of the panel here. And that is, what do you see for your business over the next year to 5 years? And in terms of not only how you see it changing, but what improvements you would like to make to it to make it a more viable and profitable operation. And so we'll start with Thomas on this one.
Obviously, we've entered the digital revolution, and there are a lot of people that are a little skittish about it. I'm one of those that actually feels that there's a lot of good potential in the digital revolution sending people into comic shops. For that to work, there has to be enough good comic shops to send them to. We're already seeing traffic come in based on some of the free offerings that DC has provided online and some of the other vendors. What I'm going to focus on for the next 1 to 5 years is an increased sense of community, because you need to make your shop a place that people want to be. So events, gatherings, parties, signings, these things for us, I mean, this is kind of what keeps us going and keeps us growing. We get new people in every time we do something like this, and if I'm running my business correctly, they only need to see the store once to know that it's someplace that they may want to come back to. And that's every day when I walk in, I look around and go, okay, if someone new walks in today, what's going to get them to want to come back? Because getting a person in the door one time is easy. Getting them in the door the second and the third time, that's the trick. And if you can master that trick, you can actually grow your business.
Derek?
What I'd like to do probably is, I want to do a bigger store, and I mean from top to bottom, do it to show the product. Everything I do in the store is always designed so people can see the statues, they can see the toys, they can see the comics, and get a feel for what goes into this art form. I mean, I want to. The next store is probably going to be like an eye orgy, is what the goal I'm going for. Where you know, you just see something, you're like ah, and you know, you see someone over there ah, and then you know, you get to leave, and you have you know, you can't smoke anywhere anymore, but you feel totally like you know, I'm everything that I wanted to see is in my brain now. And of course, I take all your money because I want you to buy stuff while you're there. And you know, I had one point in time I wanted to do other stores. But then I was like, well, you know, that's not really, I want to do the job of getting them to come to one place, not really like branch out and try to take over other places. And, you know, I also feel like I don't want to push other people around because, you know, my ideas are big and, you know, that would be unfair or whatever. But it's just basically presenting the material we have. The iPad is great. And the iPhone is great, but, you know, when you pick up that comic book, it's freaking awesome. So that's kind of what, you know, I want to do. I want to make it a store that people are going to see and be like, you know, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. That's my plan.
You know, we've been seeing a lot of increases in our business because we've been doing a lot of events. And one of the things I would like to do is continue to increase the number of events we're doing. We've been doing webcomic rampages, and so we're sort of reaching out to people who are online to try to bring them into the stores. And that's worked very well for us. I'd also like to do more assignments, especially with independent publishers. We just did an independent comics get-together, and that, again, did pretty darn well for us, so I'd like to do more of that. You know, one of the places I've seen, I want to do more social networking advertising. We've done some really good experiments with Facebook. We're advertising through Facebook, and that's been darn spiffy. As far as the franchise goes, you know, currently, we opened our first store in Bellevue. I'd like to, maybe in the next year or two, open another couple of retailers who want to open, given the amount of time. So that's pretty much where I want to go.
Okay. Michael.
Joe, I have one word for you. Pogs. I believe it is heavily in pogs. And they're coming back. And issues of Spawn. Back issues of Spawn, Brigade, Young Blood, all that other stuff. Maybe some Warriors of Plasma, right?
Was that shoot the white gloves?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, actually. You know, like these guys, they covered it. I want to do more events. Events are great. I really want to redesign our website because it's horrible. I mean, it's not horrible. It's a good website. But I really want to take advantage of more of the digital stuff, the digital comics that are coming through. I have no desire to sell. Again, sorry, Thomas. No desire to sell online. You know, I think that...
I'm okay with that.
The competition on there is really, really fierce. But I absolutely 100% agree with basically all these guys. Focus on the store. Make it a place that people want to go. Because that's the advantage that we have. You know, like I said, there are 10 comic shops in Portland, but my biggest competitor is Amazon. Which, you know, is fine. I don't begrudge, really, people... You know, wanting to get their trades for 30 or 40% off. Times are tough, everybody wants to save a buck. But I also want to feed my family, and I want to make it a place where people can discover new comics. You know, a place where I was telling the story earlier today, one of the greatest feelings I get is when a family comes in with a little kid, and the kid is just out of his mind about comics. You know, and they get him a Star Wars comic or whatever, and he just loses his marbles. And I love that, because it reminds me of me when I was a kid. And that's one reason why I did this, you know, is to kind of pay it back. You know, guys like Joe and guys like, David, I guess.
He's an old school.
He's a seasoned.
Staying out of that one.
So, there you go.
I think the thing in common with everyone, once you open a business, you're always going to be evolving the way you market yourselves in the community and market yourselves with your store. And that's what everybody here has said that they want to do in the next 5 years. And this is something that you're constantly going to do as a small business owner, is evolve yourself with the community and market and improve the way that you get the message of your store out to the people that you want to sell to.
A good retail store is always a work in progress. Okay, so let's start taking some questions.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I had owned a California store in the mid-1980s through the early 1990s out in Long Island, New York. And I sold it off for Heroes World for a couple of years.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And Joe.
Thank you, Joe. I was going to apologize first.
But when I had our store with my partners, we had 17 distributors, and now it's down to one or two. Times have changed a lot, but the main focus of our business was, you know, new comics were relatively inexpensive to invest in because, you know, there weren't such things as trades yet. Our main, our other business was back issues. That's how we made the majority of our money. You know, now my old partners and I want to reopen the shop, and we looked at how everything has changed, where it seems like our main competitor is not necessarily the retail stores in our area. It seems like MidtownComics.com is probably our number one, going to be our number one competitor, because more people are getting used to ordering online and not even going out to the shop. So, yeah, we did a little study in Manhattan, and, you know, we're finding out, you know, this is our data we got, whether it's ultimately correct or not, find out. But it seems like our competition, is the web. It's not necessarily, going to Midtown Comics, the store. It's going to be having to deal with customers to try to, you know, dissuade them from ordering online exclusively and come to, you know, other shops. So I want to get your guys' take on that, because it's a concern that we have before we open doors. You know, we're planning on opening up the store in October, and our data is telling us this is an issue.
Well, first off, there's an old statistic that works, and that is that when an existing comic book store closes, about 80% of the business that they do just goes away. 20% of it will migrate someplace else. I also believe that the inverse is true, that a new store will create 80% business new, and only 20% of it will have migrated from someplace else. The concerns about Midtown and online, this is a still a very tactile medium. It's a medium that people, what you've heard from everyone up here is, we want to expose people to new books that they're going to want to come back to month in and month out, year in and year out. And the way to do that isn't necessarily selling it to them online, some kind of a deal, but it's actually putting it in their hands. You, me to you, you to the next.
Expanding a little bit on what Joe said, I don't think that Midtown.com is going to be your primary competition. You're going to have more direct competition from Midtown itself, because Midtown is an experience. In my experience, there are three types of comic shoppers. There's people who want to buy books in the store, there's people that want to buy their books online, and then there's a small crossover in between who will do based on whether it's convenient. If they can get to the shop, great. If not, they'll buy them online. You're not competing with the online is what it is. Those people that are willing to actually have their book shipped to them, those are a very set, certain type of customer. So I would focus more on what's around you from a store perspective and less about worrying about what Midtown.com is going to do to you.
Anything to add to that?
The way I usually look at any of that stuff is, when your goal is just to get people to come into your store that one time, you're going to prove when they come to your store that you're a better experience. It's worth their time to come back.
You hope.
That's the way I look at it. I'm not competing against any store. I'm not competing against Walmart. That doesn't matter. I'm competing with what we present to the people when we get them in. Now, you do events, you do marketing, you hit the road at wherever you can to get people to know that you exist and to come in. But the trick is, once you get them there, you got to make sure that that's the best thing they've ever experienced. You know, it doesn't have to be the greatest by a store, but, that personal experience of, hey, a lot of stores, the online stores, they don't have Stumptown. They don't, those little niche books that, they might like this one thing, but you can recommend something that these other stores, they don't know exist. That's where you got your opportunity to prove to them that this is a worthy opportunity. This is a worthy place to go. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, create the experience. That's what you need to focus on.
I think that I have seen more than enough examples of stores that have opened up and have created new customers that were not originally in that area of where a store was servicing a specific area. And so they have grown the industry, and that is what you can do in your marketplace, is take what Tom and Derek have said and provide an experience, provide your personality, and you can grow the industry there.
I think one of the things is that what Joe was saying about growing 80% or bringing in a commensurate number of people from an area is a good point. I think the one thing you need to be careful of is you don't want to open too near an existing store, because you do want to generate those new customers. Opening up near an existing store is not good for you, and it's not good for them, and it's not particularly good for the industry. There's plenty of places that are underserved that you can generate your own customers. We also, I guess, just addressing to digital for a second, I think we learned today that, a lot of the people who are buying digital comics are, some of them, or at least I think since this was said publicly, I can repeat it, 19% of the people who were buying digital comics had never gone into a comic book store, and about 9% of the people were then converted into comic book customers, comic shop customers. So I think that there's a lot of potential there to bring customers in from the digital revolution.
And then 40% of those who are downloading comics online are from outside the United States.
I'd be curious to know.
That's English language comics. So
I'd be curious to know what percentage of people that have downloaded comics thus far are not already comic shop retailers that want to see what it looks like.
Right.
So the retailers have been seeing the shift in that a lot of comic book buyers that buy trade paperbacks buy from Amazon because they get 30% off, and the digital market's starting. you find that, has that impacted your store directly, immediately, or it's kind of like, okay, it's such a gradual thing, we can make up for it in a way?
Back issues have been affected, no doubt about it. 20 years ago, back issues were 40% of my business, and now they're under 10%. But there are other categories we can talk about in the same light. Sports cars at one point were 15% of, my business, and now they're 1%. And it goes on. Everything sort of has an ebb and a flow. The one thing that's remained constant is that we sell a tremendous amount of comics. And the back issue buyers may not be as dominant as they once were, but the trade paperback buyers, the graphic novel buyers, have definitely exceeded what the back issue buyers once were.
I'll give you a concrete example, at least in my store. Absolutes and Marvel omnibuses. I can't sell them to save my life. I mean, I can sell Sandman, the Sandman ones, but the other ones, you know, $75, $100, $150 books. You know, somebody's going to go to Amazon and get it. But this is where you compete, because Amazon is kind of a faceless thing, and you can make that connection with your customer. And that's really, I think, one of the great, great advantages we have. And that really helps us, because we generate, you know, because you're more likely to listen to somebody you trust if they recommend Stumptown. If you go to Derek's store and he's like, hey, you gotta read this, I know you like this stuff, here you go. You're probably going to give it a shot. Whereas if you see it on Amazon and it says, hey, you know, people who bought this also bought that. And, you know, I don't know if that works. It doesn't work for me, but...
Right.
That's a great point.
Okay, let's go to the next question.
Hi. I've heard basically the information so that you have families too, as I do. I was curious about providing for a family. I have two small children, obviously my wife. How would you characterize your stability of income over the year? And I knew I was going to get a laugh from somebody on that. And benefits, health benefits, and dental, and things like that. What do you do? This is not too personal a question, but what do you do in those cases to provide for your family as far as health insurance goes, and to make sure that your income is consistent with your your regular expenses?
Marry well.
Well, we get health insurance through our stores. I do buy health insurance, and I do provide health insurance for my wife. We also offer health insurance for full-time employees. Basically, we pay half and they pay half. So we are strong enough to do that. You are going to see an ebb and flow of your income from month to month. For us, at least in Austin, summer's really good for us. The holiday season is really good for us. First start of the year is pretty good for us, but for some reason, August through October really sucks. So you pretty much have to know the patterns of things and just budget yourself that way.
I think your question gets a little bit complicated because, for the most part, I think the panel is probably a little bit more removed from that because we've all been established for quite some time. I don't want to gloss over the fact that the first couple of years can be very, very difficult because you've got everything invested. You're spending way more time in the store than you ever thought you were going to. It's like you have to be prepared for it going in, and you need to have some kind of a backup plan because you may run into some months where, you know, you didn't control your inventory the way you would have, could have, should have, and you can find yourself in a, you know, in a bind here and there. But, you know, you just got to kind of have backup plans for, you know, when those things hit so that you don't put 18 months of your life into something and then, you know, one or two bad months, you know, has you, you know, grasping. So
one of the things that I always tell people, you know, when they come to me for sage wisdom advice is, you know, start, you know, no matter what it is, if you start your store, sock away $25 a week, $50 a week, whatever you can afford into a rainy day fund. It's real easy. I did it as soon as we opened, and I do an automatic transfer from our business checking or business savings. And it's nice to have a buffer. If you can do it, I mean, obviously it's difficult in the beginning. But there are a lot of things that are out of everybody's control. I mean, you know, you can have construction tearing up your street for 2 or 3 months, and that's really going to impact your business. You're at the whim of the publishers. I mean, publishers don't put something out or anything interesting, not that they ever do that, but you know, you're kind of there too. I mean, if there's not a big book or something that people are really looking forward to, you know, you're in trouble. I mean, I would like to imagine that we all are doing extremely well with Scott Pilgrim right now, which is a great boon, but that, you know, that kind of stuff can really knock down your keister, because if you have a great July this year because it's Scott Pilgrim, next year you may expect that, and it may not happen. So you really got to keep a really close eye on that.
I think my two cents is that everything is a budget item, and paying yourself is a budget item. Build that into your cost, even if it's minimal to begin with. Build it into your cost so that the worst thing you can do in opening a new business is get ticked off because you're not getting anything out of it, because that starts to affect everything you do in your business. So if you build those things in advance, you prevent some of those problems from happening, and you can make adjustments to that as you go along. Okay, let's take the next question. We're going to try to buzz through a bunch of these because we've got a lot of people standing up and half an hour to go.
Okay. I just had a, because I'm really kind of trying to start my own shop and saving for a year so far, but when it comes to, my comic book retailer that I usually go to has told me that, well, he's been thinking about selling his store. And I'm wondering, what's the better option between either, you know, buying an established store with like clientele that's already there for you, or establishing a new store where you have more control to kind of do your own thing?
Well, our panel of experts has three retailers up here who have bought stores from other people. So have at it, guys.
It really depends on the store. It really depends on what that person has done with it, and that's not to say have they done great things with it or have they done bad things with it. I mean, what drew me to actually buying Beach Ball Comics was the fact that it had a huge history and a lot of neglect. So it was nothing but opportunity. And so for me, it was the right price rolling in because of the way the store had kind of been let go for a while and a huge amount of history and opportunity. And so, you know, costing that out, that made more sense than trying to start from scratch, because there were fixtures and there were customers and there was location and there was all of these things that are a project in and of themselves when you're trying to actually open a store from scratch.
So. Well, now, when I bought the store from Tim Bowl, I had the benefit of, you know, it wasn't an astronomical price. I probably paid a little bit more because I was so enthusiastic than I probably should have.
Superpower backfired.
Yes. But one thing that Tim did do was he stayed on for 6 months and worked for me. That was something that, you know, at the end of the day, there's no price that I could, you know, pay for that. Because that was 6 months of me avoiding every stupid mistake that my enthusiasm would have, you know, let me do.
And that was a great opportunity for Derek, but in my case, if that had happened at Beach, I would have hung myself if I'd have to spend 6 months with that guy. So, I mean, again, it depends on the situation.
Don't get me wrong, Tim, it was some friction there or whatever, because, you know, you want to do it, but it's like the mentoring program that we have at Comics Pro. It has the you could learn something from somebody, and if they're going to provide that type of guidance, that would be something that could really help you out, because most of the mistakes are made in the ordering. And, you know, ordering the product is where you usually go wrong, and it's usually you order too much, and you put yourself in a real bad bind. And, you know, he would take the order and tear it apart. Now I've changed and I order a lot more stuff, but I've got a feel for what's gonna work. When you first start out, that feel is not there. You know, let's get you like some idiot savant. I'm an idiot, but you're not a savant. And if you're going to buy a store, you know, you have to know exactly what's in there and what you're paying for. Don't pay for goodwill. That means nothing. You know, if you're going to have a client base, you've got to actually look up and find out exactly what you're paying for, how much you're going to do, and then at the end of the day, sit down for a week and figure out, is it worth it? You know, are you going to get some money? Because it's a business deal. It's a product you're buying. You got to figure out, are you going to be able to turn this out and make it work? If you enjoy the place, that's half of it. But what's going on behind the scenes? What else is involved? Where are your taxes? What's your lease? You know, will you take this over? This, you know, the back debt. You know, this, that. So that's the correct. When I bought the store, there was no back debt, and there was $11,000 in the bank, cash, and whatever was in the register. So, you know, that, you know, I was able to function right from the go. Never had an issue with that type of problem. But that's something you probably won't get from most places. But you know, Tim was a good guy, so I don't know about.
I think you're going to want to find a place that has a fairly good reputation, and also you are going to want to see places where there's opportunity for you to grow the business. In my opinion, what you're buying when you buy an existing store is time. Basically, rather than you building up a store from scratch and you having to find the facilities and et cetera ad nauseum, you're getting a store that's already going. Now, whether or not that's necessarily a good store or a bad store, it's going to depend on the store you're looking at.
But at least you have income flow right out the gate.
Right.
Instead of 90 to 120 days of nothing coming in. So.
Okay. Let's get to the next question.
I'm just wondering what the typical range of initial capital requirements are for a new store, and then rules of thumb for picking a location.
Good question.
Yeah, unfortunately, the answers are so varied that it's really complicated. So it depends on where you're at, for one thing. I mean, I know that I probably pay less rent for all three of my stores than other guys I know that pay for one store. So
everything is going to vary from place to place.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that, you know, because I've had to set up the franchise, I have to tell people what I think they should spend. And basically it comes down to $110,000 for fixturing, initial stock, rent for a few months, you know, and honestly, an initial franchise fee, et cetera. And then I want my franchisees to have an additional $50,000 to live on and for operating capital. I mean, that's really what I kind of, and of course that's going to vary from place to place because rent varies so mightily from, you know, Texas is fairly cheap. Seattle, much more expensive.
Yeah, and it also depends on if you do open a brand new store. Like when we opened ours, we had to do everything. We had to. It was basically a warehouse that they had kind of redone and split up the walls and stuff. So we had to, you know, seal the floors. We had to get an electrician to put up lighting and do all this stuff. You know, you got a sign if you want a sign on an SDR sign or something. You got. I mean, there's tons and tons of stuff. I mean, we. Let's keep this between you and I. But it cost me between $30,000 and $40,000 to open up my store. And the shelves were fairly bare, but it's okay. Kind of like Thomas was saying, you've got 60 to 90 to 120 days where you want to make a good first impression, but you don't need a fully stocked store because the people, kind of to speak to a point Derek was making about over-ordering, when you open a store, don't go crazy with Spider-Man. Don't go crazy with X-Men. People who are buying that, people who are going to buy that are buying it somewhere else. So
For now.
Well, yeah, for now. But, you know, I opened it up and I was like, screw it, I'm going to need 20 copies of everything. Da, da, da. And, you know, I sell one or two because people who are buying that will get it somewhere else before I have a chance to keep them to the store.
And the best advice I got before I opened about stocking was from a retailer that I was buying my comics from. And he started filling out my first order for him. And I was surprised when he passed over X-Men and a couple of things like that, and then put maximum numbers of 3 on different things. And so, what would you do that for? I'm gonna run out of stuff really quickly. He said, no, what you're going to do is you're going to listen to what your customers asked you for, and then you're going to restock that. So the opening stock is the... you know, sort of the ground level, and then by being an active listener, you find out what else to bring in. That can save you money on the initial stocking fee. Diamond also has a program still.
We have several programs. We'll outfit you with a program that will give you sell you trades at your maximum possible discount for a one-time buy. There are vendors that will give you free trades when you first open your store, and that there are vendors that will give you positive, some of the best discounts for your first 4 to 6 months of business.
And in terms of rent, you know, there are retailers that pay 50 cents a square foot per month, and others that are paying like $5 or $6.
I wish.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's based on location, based on what the traffic is. Philosophy in terms of trying to find a location for my store was to put it near a higher traffic major retailer. And at that time, it was Lucky Supermarkets. They're out of business now, but there's a Trader Joe's where the Lucky's was. And there are more than 10,000 shoppers a week going into that Trader Joe's. So being close to that, I'm paying a little bit more rent to be close to something like that, but it also creates immediate traffic in the area where a standalone, non-strip mall kind of location would be cheaper, a warehouse location. Let's take the next question.
So my cousin and I are thinking of a day of Hollywood store in like 6 days or something. We're graduating about this. I'm one of the many who has to go to comic book stores, and I used to remember the initial call I had going to them. I was absolutely terrified. I had no idea what to look for. I didn't know what to go. And I was terrified of asking people. And I had some bad experience with people ignoring me. So I'm just kind of curious, for your stores, how do you pretty much ease new clients, females, you know, into the comic book world? And you know, a lot of it's already in the series. You know, how do you get them going?
We made sure that when we outfitted both stores, we actually tried to follow more of a mass market bookstore look and feel. So when people walk in, they don't feel like they're walking into the old school comic dungeon, you know, where the guy behind the counter only talks to the people that he knows, that type of thing. Plus, I mean, it's going to vary on how big your store is. Our stores are smaller, and so we have a proximity factor where every single person that walks in the door should have contact with an employee right away, because it would take the employee going out of their way to not do that. So, I mean, a lot of it's just, you know, well-lit, friendly, clean. I mean, it's the basics. It's really business basics. So it's about how you treat them when they come in and not making them feel like they're creeped out. I mean, it's a huge underappreciated factor in a lot of the, you know, a lot of the comic shops that have been around a really long time, except for Joe's store.
Well, it's always a challenge, I think, for the comic stores to develop their customer service, and the most important thing is just to make sure that the employees are saying hello when you walk in the door.
Mm-hmm. When I first got the store, the first thing I did was I tripled the number of lights that we had in our store. I mean,
looking through the sun.
Yeah, basically, that was the first thing I said, is I wanted to be as bright as the sun in here. I have this thing where...
And he's in Vegas.
the unspeakable, the unbreakable, I thought that was an interesting look for a store with that neon look that had going on. I loved it. So that was the first thing. I mean, most of my employees are girls. I actually only advertise, most of my advertisements based towards girls. I really don't, most guys, I don't have to advertise towards them. They're going to find me eventually. Yeah, they might, when their store sells out of Daredevil 508, they're going to come find me. And they're going to come in and, you know, then I'll have 508 and they can check it out from there. So it's not, I spend a lot of time marketing girls. I would say probably our customer base, 25-30% are women. And it's, you know, large aisle spaces, you know, so they don't fit. That's why I read a lot of these books, like, you know, about how women shop. I'm just so I can feel comfortable. Yeah, Paco Underhill. So that, you know, people come in, they feel comfortable. There's never any, you know, the leery thing. You have to, if these guys up here, you kind of see this. These are comic retailers. You think that they're these, you know, lecherous, you know.
I was going to say lecherous.
You know, these guys party like rock stars. I mean, you know, it's they're outgoing. They can talk about anything. Most of them have really good personality. So the what people imagine comic book store owners to be are like totally different than what the reality is. I mean, you know, look at this guy. This guy's sexy. so you gotta. You gotta.
The answer is still no, Derek.
Damn it! The opportunity is there. But then one of the things I'd say is, if you're gonna do this, you have to learn how to be outgoing. You know, people are confident. That's what you're gonna have to be able to do.
You have to like people. I know that may seem, but you're going to deal with a huge number of people. If you don't like people, don't do it. It's
don't do any retail. Don't do any retail if you don't like people. Don't do any retail.
Yeah.
At the risk of embarrassing my wife, who is back over there, she and my three daughters were my marketing research team when we went to Open Flying Colors. And at the time, my three daughters were between the ages of 4 and 8 years old. And we went into more than 30 different comic book stores all over California. And the mission was to tell the girls to go in and shop the store, buy something if they wanted to, don't buy it if you don't want to, but shop the store and then come back out in the car and we're going to talk about it. And we wrote notes from every one of those stores. My wife is a teacher by training, and one of the books that she read back in the day was a book called The Classroom-Wide Life, and it's about having teachers build the classroom that they are envisioning that is going to be a great place to be. The same thing can happen in comic book stores. Envision the kind of comic book store you want to have, and the one that's going to be as inviting and attractive to as wide an audience as possible. Then go out and shop all these other stores, not just comic book stores, but your favorite other kinds of retail stores, and pick apart what it is you think is great or what stinks about them, and then use that information in terms of planning your own store. David?
Be sure to pick up Why We Buy by Paco Underhill.
Yes, definitely.
Great book.
Must read.
And Why We Buy by Paco Underhill.
He goes into this great thing about something called the butt brush method. Yes. Which is actually a legitimate thing. And it's one reason why, like Tom would say, make sure to put this fruit in our eyes so that people don't brush butts when they're browsing, because that's not comfortable.
As soon as someone gets their butt brushed, they're out the door.
Out the door. Next question.
My question, as far as your guys' thoughts or concerns as far as attracting younger readership, like middle school, high school age, like Wednesday, the regulars I always see have to be at least 25 to 40 years old, and I don't see that next generation of comic book reader that's going to take over when I'm not reading anymore.
It's.
Do you have a regular time that you go into the comic book store?
It's usually like Wednesday afternoon when I get off work. Yeah.
That's not kid time.
Right, so not necessarily. Wednesday isn't kids' time in the store.
Right.
Wednesday is hardcore comic fan time.
I mean, when I was little, I was there. Like, I used to cut grass. I was 12 years old. And
right.
I would take that money right to the comic book store on Wednesday.
But you didn't have a PSP and a PlayStation either.
I mean, I guess I just don't see those. I don't see the younger me in that store.
It's really tricky, and it's an ongoing concern for all comic retailers. And Joe gave me $5 to say this, but thanks to Free Comic Book Day, we've actually been able to deal with a lot of that. In that day, we get more kids in the store on that day than any other time of the year. And if we do that event right, those parents bring those kids back on the weekends, and we have a section just for them so that the parents can shop that section and feel comfortable that they're not pulling anything off the rack that's, you know, outside their age range for their 4 to 10 year olds. And it's a very difficult process. It's a cultivation process. It's a community process, and it's got to be ongoing. For me, in my store, I tell people straight up, my kids section is a loser right now from a profitability standpoint, but it's worth it to me to keep that section well stocked, because just having one or two families in on the weekend where I've got little kids buying books, that it's worth the extra money that I've put out to do that.
Well, an interesting point too is that really when you're talking about getting kids in the door, we really talk about getting parents in the door.
Yeah.
And parents aren't going to bring their kids to a shop that they don't feel comfortable in.
Right.
And we sell because that's what the parents know. Yep. They look at, you know, you have to have a very well-defined comics, kids' comic section away from the normal. Because I've had parents come in, and they take their little kids to go get the new issue of Spider-Man, and I'm like, well, I don't know if that's really going to be great. You know, it's more adult writing, it's longer stories, whatever. Check out the Marvel Adventures Spider-Man type stuff. But really, the battle is getting the parents in the store with the kids. So, depending on location, depending on what your school looks like.
Yeah, it goes back to her question, really, about...
I think one good sign is we're seeing the publishers make more and more books.
Definitely.
From Pixar to Rod Jr., who is making books geared just for reading for young readers in the second grade or first grade, third grade. So yeah, I think that says a lot that we're getting more young readers in our stores.
And the other part of it is community, is how you integrate your store into your community. And that can be in terms of dealing with libraries and schools, about getting comics into their libraries, giving comics away for different fundraisers, taking comics out into the community rather than waiting for people to come into your store and marketing it.
Boys and Girls Clubs, Cub Scout Troops.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to the next question.
So, Tom's Derek, got a lot of questions about how you're here with the Tim Fish afterwards.
Whoa, hey. We've got guys up here.
He's made his choice, Michael. Experience things you never thought you were going to experience, and you're not going to get that store where you want it to be within a year. I mean, it's an ongoing process. I mean, 10 years in, my store is still being changed on a weekly basis. So you want to make sure that you've got yourself in and solid first with one store. Make sure that you not only get it to where you want it, but you know that that store is being profitable for an extended period of time before you then go to try to add another one. I try to remain as friendly and open as possible with every single comic retailer that I can talk to, whether they're 6 miles down the road or 6,000 miles away. And you'll find that most comic retailers are receptive to that. I think in all of Orange County, there's one guy that won't cooperate. And I don't have a problem with that.
And then lastly, as you purchase the store, I've heard that it's best practice to change the name by one character of the business title. That way all creditors, you know, kind of get pushed off to the previous owner. Have you found that the case? Or, you know, Derek, it sounds like you knew the guy, and you had a tight relationship, and he worked for you.
Well, I mean, when you're going to buy it, I mean, I'm definitely going to go through an escrow so that you separate that all out to begin with. You're not going to just give a guy a check because, you know, you don't know what's going on in the background. I mean, he could be the greatest guy in the world, but, you know, could also have, you know, all the litigation that pops up after a while. So with an escrow, I mean, that's after that, what I agreed to is what I agreed to. Anything beyond that's on its own.
You know? Your contract is going to... hopefully identify which debts he takes with him, which ones you could agree to take on as part of the business process as well. So,
all right, thank you.
Okay, step right up and then the question away.
One of the things that I found interesting in Japan is they have a manga cafes. It was kind of like a place to hang out, and they had like snacks, and pay like hourly, and they had like a little library of books in the corner, and computers and stuff. And so that doesn't really seem to be happening here in America, and I was wondering, do you think it could work here? And if so, and if it doesn't, then why not?
I think it would work in very few places here.
I think the one, the world with the internet cafes and things like that, most of the main reason it works because most people's homes have all this stuff. You know, you don't really need an internet cafe, or, you know, when you can go hang out and read the stuff, you can do it from your home. It's just, it's a different, America just has
stuff. Actually have that here. It's called Barnes & Noble.
I don't think they're too happy with how that's working out.
But they're not stopping it either.
Right. And the publishers receiving returns on those books aren't real happy with
it. Neither are the retailers that get recycled those used books either.
Barnes & Noble's and board, they wish they could stop it. They can't figure out. Now it's kind of where they're stuck at. You know, you want people to come in and have a good time, but you don't want people to come in and move in. Because, you know, after a while,
you get people that hang out all day, those people tend to not spend any money.
And, you know,
There is a sort of a law of retailing that says the longer you get to have a customer spend in your store, the more they're going to spend. But in comics, there seems to be a diminishing return once it's past about 15 minutes.
Yeah. No, it's probably true. Yeah.
Truthfully, it comes down to you're going to have a lot of space that's going to be wasted a lot of the time. And it's painful to pay for that space if it's not making you money.
I believe there was in New York a few years ago, there was somebody who tried this concept. But it was mainly manga, actually, not like Preacher and White Last Man and stuff. I can't kind of wrap my head around that. Like, it's an interesting idea.
I think when I said it would only work in very few places, the problem is why it probably wouldn't is those few places where it would work, the rents would be astronomical, and I don't think they'd get a return on their investment.
It would require a lot of high foot traffic area.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next up.
I don't. I'm pretty much. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was thinking of an offer to combine something with an adult bookshop and the floors will be separate. The stores will be separate. We'll be sharing on the cost and whatnot. So I'm still a little leery, but I don't know what you guys are talking about.
We carry a very limited selection of adult material at one store just because of where that store is located and the type of plaza that it's in. I don't know that I would recommend attaching a comic book store to an adult bookstore. I think you would be attracting exactly the opposite base clientele that you would want to be if you're actually going to try to grow a comics business.
When I say adult, I'm talking about, you know, the super hardcore stuff. We carry Broadsword and we carry some stuff along those lines, but I've never wanted to have a section of my store with the black curtain where I got to tell people you can't go over there because there's darkness and evil or whatever. That was one of the things that I'd see in a store. It's always kind of like, well, gee, that's just creepy. And you know, don't get me wrong, I like my porn, but it's just, you know, it's not for the store. In the store, I mean, you could have it, you know, if in your own super room you have, you know, your special superhero costume with your adult material, I'd say go for it. But, you know, I don't know if you want to have, you know, Johnny and Tommy coming in where you're having your ball fetish or whatever's going on.
Thank you.
Do we need to turn your microphone off?
Yeah. Thomas here.
He gave me a mic. First
mistake. He's more final than anyone up here, and he said it wasn't a good idea. Okay, next question.
steaks.
So the gentleman that I used to work for was a great guy. He passed away a little while ago. But he was sort of broad spectrum, ordering everything, taking in independent, big secure stuff. How do you guys as retailers sort of pick and choose at the end of the day? Like, once you've reached your budget for your ordering, like, is that you say your kid section is sort of a losing section?
Financially, I don't think it's a losing section in and of itself. It's not a profit center for me.
But I mean, like, so for the smaller publisher, and it's like the superhero stuff is going to sell in general as long as it's okay. But I mean, it's like, is it, now that you're established, is it easier or harder for you to just say no to certain things? To like small press people who come in and say, like, I've got a mini comic,
well,
can you buy like five of them?
If it's a mini comic, and I'll say, dude, we'll do a consignment. And most times, if it's a mini comic, the guys are starting off, I'll just say, we'll do a consignment. And most times, I just give them the money all right off the bat. So after, and whatever sells, I'll just give them whatever sold. You know, just try to start off. And they're working. If they put that much effort into it, I'll give them a shot. If it's an independent book from a pub, you know, just a guy out there who wants to start doing a book, he has to, you know, he's going to have to sell it. He has to let me know it exists. I mean, Greg Rucka, which is Stumptown, the small independent, just bringing this up, small independent book, but it's Greg Rucka. So, you know, I'm going to carry it. Sometimes I'll flip through the catalog and I'll see it. There was a Mouse Guard. This is 100% true story. I thought Mouse Guard was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in the catalog. I was like, I ordered it. I ordered 25 copies of Mouse Guard from Arkea. I always liked Smiley. It was great. I didn't sell one to an adult. Not one adult would buy it. I would hand sell it to a little kid. I'm like, you should check this out. This is cool. 2 weeks later, or maybe two, 3 weeks later, it was in Wizard as the hot book or whatever. And everybody was like, do you still have that Mouse Guard? I'm like, nah, dude, I sold it to a kid. He has it in his back pocket rolled up where it should be or whatever, because the book was going for 50, 60 bucks at the time. I got a feel for what'll work and what I think I can sell. There's a couple of books down there. I think that's kind of cool. We'll order it. Robert Scott is a gentleman. He has a store in town here, a Kamikaze. He's got a real good feel for some of the indie stuff. I mean, I pick his brain all the time. I'm like, you know, he'll recommend something out of the blue. I'm like, I never heard of it. And it's like, wow, this is the greatest thing. There's a book down there, Tumors, which I thought was great.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I guess it was on the Kindle, but I'm poor. I don't have a Kindle. And I said, the book was just a phenomenal-looking thing. And I'm like, I need more of this. And you're gonna get the stuff, and you're going to see it, and you're going to be like, this is what I can sell. I know that I can get somebody to read this.
The good news is a lot of the smaller publishers are actually putting previews online that retailers have access to, and I use that hugely. I want to carry as many independent books as possible, but I want to carry books that are going to sell. I mean, just to order one of everything from that back section of that catalog would be insane unless you've got a huge store, you know, or unless you've got a huge clientele, or you're in an area that you know, can sell a lot of that, like a good college town area, that type of thing. So,
was it Comic Relief that you worked at?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's Rory's a whole different. He's a whole different animal. He's a great guy. But he's had an uphill battle. I mean, there's so much great stuff out there. Like I see Rory Henry and Glenn Forever.
Yeah.
Great book, but you can only get it from a couple of spots, and it's not on the. I mean, it's on everybody's radar now, or at least it should be. It's a great book, but you know, we have 24 hours in a day, and I like to try and sleep for at least 6 or 7 of those.
And lazy.
I know. Lazy.
It's a Northwest thing.
but you know, we do the best we can. We can't carry every single thing.
And you shouldn't.
No.
And you shouldn't. Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, what you should always keep in mind is that whatever you order, it's yours when you receive it.
Yeah.
And so you better have a plan for how you're going to move it. And if you feel skittish about anything that you're trying to bring in because you don't have enough information about it, it doesn't look quite right, or whatever, if you don't have customers in mind for it, it's likely going to sit there. And, you know, I was one of Rory's best friends for a long time, and, you know, God love him, but if he sold out of something that he had one copy of for 15 years, then go immediately
immediately out and try to find another copy to replace the one that took 15 years to sell.
And remember Roy's philosophy was he wanted to be the comic book store. So yeah. That was why he did what he did.
Just and then just my curiosity, reading in the store.
Reading in the store?
Yeah.
No. You mean with staff or
no. No, actually that's a good staff and or customers.
I prefer browsing. Because I actually had somebody come in and read. There's a BPRD series out, and she read the first four issues, and she picked up the fifth issue, and I actually had to say, come on. I mean, seriously. Like, you can read one issue, you can read three pages and know what you're going to like. Because, you know, for me, in my story, I don't know about these guys, you know, it does damage the product in some way, any kind of wear and tear. And, you know, I'm happy with people browsing stuff. Browsing is great, but I can't afford to have people sitting on the floor reading books. I mean, it's like the worst.
And that's generally what we'll tell them if we think they're reading too much is that we don't sell used books, and right now you're making that a used book.
And we sell the story. So if they're taking the story without paying for it, I mean, to some extent that's okay. But, you know, at a certain point you have to say that you're abusing the privilege. As for employees reading on the floor, never, as far as I'm concerned. They can borrow a product and take it home and bring it back. But
that's what we do, too.
We want them to pay attention to customers.
One of my employees, actually, he does read. I'm actually okay with it because it helps engage the customers. And they say, like, oh, well, what are you reading? Because you're reading. I mean, he still engages them when they come in and says hi and stuff. But some people like to just walk around and browse. And he's found that, hey, I'm reading Guardians of the Galaxy. And they say, what's it about? And, oh, well, here's the first trade.
I just get to one last question. We got about 30 seconds here to go. And there's the last gentleman in line. Go for it.
I'll try to make it quick. I was wondering if you could help share some information on the profit margin on the things that you sell, like t-shirts, graphic novels, back issues, toys. And then the second part of the question was, can you negotiate rates with your distributors based on the relationship you have with them or on the volume you purchase?
There are volume discounts from different distributors based upon how much you buy. You know, general rule of thumb is you want to try to keystone pretty much everything in your store. There are going to be some product lines that you're not able to do that with. Toys is a little bit of a dicier situation in terms of trying to double your wholesale cost. But blended average cost of goods is probably going to be in the 40 to 50% range. Yeah.
Assuming you're selling it.
Assuming you're selling through.
Right. And it doesn't include shipping. There's a lot of other stuff that goes along with it, too. So you keep all that in line. So.
Okay, we have pamphlets over here up in the front. I want to thank Michael, Dave,